It's over now. It's over now.
And good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I am your host, Anna Edwards, and today is Monday. Defenders Live is brought to you as a production of The Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality, and you can learn more at defendersfje.org and defendersfje.blogspot.com. If you want to track what happens on this radio show, you can go to defendersliveradio.blogspot.com, where you can listen to archived shows just by clicking on listen. Today, my guest is former City Councilman Saad El Amin, and you are also the executive director of the Preservation for Virginia Antiquities.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to the show.
And thank you for having me.
Well, it's been a long time, and so it's good to have you across the table.
Yes.
And talking about an issue that is coming up in all kinds of ways over the last year, I'd say, in a way, I think on a national level, one of the incidents that sort of raised this issue to some prominence was Michelle Alexander's book on the new Jim Crow. And essentially talking about our prison industrial system and the very specific symptom of that here in Virginia, which is in fact a long-standing symptom, and that is the issue of the restoration of voter rights once a convicted felon has served his or her time. You have filed a federal lawsuit. And it is to restore your voting rights, and obviously by effect, much like the Lovings case, to restore the rights of others.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about the timing of your lawsuit.
Anna, there are 400,000 persons in the state of Virginia who are so-called ex-felons, people who have been convicted of a felony offense, who by virtue of that conviction are denied the right to vote and the right to hold public office. I am one of them. Mm-hmm. And so I characterize us as being stateless people, because to be a person with state is obviously the right to participate in the government that you are responsible to follow and obey. So what has happened is that we have all of the obligations of citizenship, but none of the rights and privileges. And it is interesting to note that no court, no judge, no jury ever said that as a result of your conviction, you are not able to vote. You're right. Given a sentence, a fine, a period of probation, and then if you successfully negotiate all of those, then you're back. But with the registrar of the city, county, or town in which you live in, your right to register and vote are denied. And the whole issue of the right to vote has been a third rail political issue in Virginia from the very beginning. Not only just with regard to people of African descent, but women.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you know, the right mm-hmm. to vote did not come to women until 1920.
That's right.
And so, but what I want to do is to, what I did was I looked at this history of this disenfranchisement. And Virginia is one of four states that has what is called lifetime disenfranchisement, although there is a process in Virginia where you can petition, or as I call it, beg the sitting governor and say, Mr. Governor, will you please give me back my rights? Mm. The governor has the sole authority to do it. There are no rules or regulations that govern how he makes that decision. It is an unfettered discretionary decision, and it's one which is very political in its sense. And so, you know, Republicans, Democrats, they all have the same approach. Disenfranchised people are basically invisible politically. And having served as a public elected official, I recognize that most politicians want as few people on the rolls as they can, because that is key. Because the fewer people you have to convince to get elected or stay elected.
Yeah, there was just a commentary by Jim Hightower this morning, mm-hmm. talking about. I guess it was in Arizona.
Yes,
right. It was in Arizona, mm-hmm. where the Tea Party is claiming a resounding victory of the people.
Right.
By the election of a challenger to the Senate seat there, when
Correct.
In fact it was 4%
right.
of the 15 million people who are eligible to vote.
Right, right. Yeah. And you can see that in yeah. virtually every vote that occurs. The vast majority of people eligible to register and vote either don't register or don't go out to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And it is particularly high among the so-called minorities. African Americans, Hispanics, poor people.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't see the cause effect, because what you end up doing is you get pushed in front of you the lesser of two evils, and you're asked to vote for the lesser of two evils, which is an evil in and of itself. And so they can't see that there is really an incentive to vote, because they have been taught that their vote is basically a meaningless act.
Right.
So what I did was I decided that I could not go to the governor and say, give me back what you didn't have a right to take. So I sat on this for a while and it percolated. And during this period, I taught American history and Virginia history at a local Muslim high school. And I became very fascinated with the law. I mean, the period of history called the Confederate history, the Confederate years.
Mm.
Because during that time, all of the machinations that went into this disenfranchisement of felons occurred. And then when reading the cases that many people brought to challenge the disenfranchisement, they argued that it was racially disproportionate impact, negative impact on race.
Mm.
And every court, including the United States Supreme Court, said that doesn't work, because there is a provision in the 14th Amendment of the United States which says that people convicted of crimes and people engaged in rebellion were, you know,
mm-hmm.
disenfranchised.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that struck a bell. And mm-hmm. I said, wow, I know that they have disenfranchised felons. So let me go and look at the history and see what they did to Confederates.
Right.
And lo and behold, not to be surprising, near a single Confederate was ever disenfranchised. So what the state of Virginia did was that it decided to only enforce the disenfranchisement against felons,
mm-hmm.
allowing rebels or Confederates to continue to vote and hold office. And I said, oh, now we got an equal protection issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also found a case that was very interesting, a 1985 Supreme Court of the United States case, which said that if a state has historically engaged in the suppression of the African-American vote, then any law that can be traced back to that will then be invalid, even if it has a good purpose today. It cannot be sanitized.
Yeah.
So we look at the history of Virginia, grandfather clause, literacy tests,
right.
poll taxes,
mm-hmm.
and all the other things, intimidation, burning crosses to keep black people from voting. And so I said, I have the elements that are necessary to bring a successful lawsuit. And having been a trial lawyer for over 30 years, and having been a civil rights lawyer for that period of time, I figured, why not use the skills and the training to bring this suit? And as you can attest, that lawsuits sometimes are more important when you don't win than when you win, because the lawsuit has an ability to centralize, galvanize, and put together in a formal process the issues that you can't get out there any other way. Yeah. And so I realized that the other problem is that we are back in Virginia, probably the United States, where we were during the so-called civil rights movement, wherein the legislators, there is no political will to extend civil rights by virtue of legislative fiat. So Brown versus Board of Education, all of those cases that have been, they had to go to courts as a last resort. Mm-hmm. And it was the courts that changed the fabric of America with regard to civil rights, not the legislators. And so we are back to that again,
yeah,
because of the fact that, for example, in our House of Delegates, it's a majority Republican reactionary. The Senate is split 50-50 with a sitting lieutenant governor who is the tiebreaker, and he will always break ties in favor of the Republican
position, sure,
positions. Mm-hmm. And the Tea Party has essentially taken hold of the Republican Party and moved it farther right than it already was.
Mm-hmm.
So we face a very huge challenge in terms of going to the legislature and asking our elected representatives, would you please do this? And this suit is, interestingly enough, dedicated to Senator Yvonne Miller, who just died.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Senator Miller spent the last 12 years of her life with enfranchising legislation. And you know, Anna, not one of those bills ever got out of committee. As a matter of fact, the bill that was for 2012 was put off until 2013. It's always put back, and mm-hmm. it's never going to mm-hmm. change. So the only relief is the relief that you can get from a court. And interestingly enough, I have drawn John Gibney, who is the newest federal judge. And John, who he and I were opponents on many cases back in the day, John just ruled that the state of Virginia's, the election commission's rule that you must be a registered voter in order to be able to circulate petitions is a violation of the right to vote.
Right. That's right.
So that's a huge decision that he made.
Yeah.
And that changes the landscape of how you get on the ballot. So I think we have a winner.
Mm-hmm.
Now, guess what? If, no, let's say when this happens, the political landscape of Virginia changes forever. 400,000 people, of that, it has been conservatively predicted that more than three quarters of those people will vote against the Republican reactionaries.
Sure.
What happens then? Virginia comes out from a battleground state.
Mm-hmm.
If we can get this done by November, then you can put the state of Virginia in President Obama's column.
Right. That's right.
So there is a lot here.
Yeah, which
it's
means,
huge.
Yeah, which means people will stop getting the opportunity to actually shake hands with
yes,
Mr. President.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yes, correct, correct. And then you look at the selection that Governor Romney just made this weekend
of
Paul Ryan,
mm-hmm.
who is probably as popular for us as Colonel Sanders was to chickens.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was a remarkable, in a way, you know, from their perspective, it seemed to me a remarkably smart thing for him to do that was a little unexpected,
yes,
given his recent record.
Right.
I just want to let our listeners know that you are listening to The Defenders Live here on WRIR. It's 97.3 LPFM. It is on your radio dial, and you can listen live at WRIR.org. And we repeat on Tuesdays, online only, at 11 o'clock. My guest today is former City Councilman Saad El Amin and current litigant, federal litigant, in a lawsuit to restore voting rights, restore his voting rights and therefore Virginia voting rights, and in fact has a goal of getting that done in time for the election.
Yes.
It's one of the things that I found interesting about reading, you know, the paperwork and the documentation was that the biggest thrust of this is to provide a context for people to understand where this kind of legislation comes from and therefore what it means today. It's always that, you know, the talking about preserving Virginia antiquities is because the references are so important.
Yes.
Whether they are symbolically true or factually true at any given moment, these are critically important historical things to understand. And I was impressed by moving through that legislation. And when I asked about the timing of this legislation, a little bit it has to do with the fact that we are, of course, in this really bizarre period called the sesquicentennial.
Yes.
Of the Civil War and emancipation and all that that evokes.
Yes.
And so what does it mean to have over 400,000 people who cannot vote? And even if they engaged the process that currently exists, even if every last one of them filed an application to the governor, obviously there is no way that those are going to be processed.
No.
So that in and of itself indicates that the system was designed to preserve that disenfranchisement.
Of course.
I had not, and this may just be my ignorance, heard the four states referred to as having lifetime disenfranchisement.
Yes.
And basically, that means the default is you are disenfranchised.
Until you do something about
until
it.
Until you do something specific.
No, until you ask and then somebody says, okay.
Right.
See, just because you ask
doesn't mean
it's going to be okay.
Right, right.
And
right,
then
right.
There are a lot of people who just don't want to bother.
Right.
Because the lawsuit itself has a very interesting twist, and that is that it says that you could not take my rights anyway. Not that when I get out of prison and
right.
off probation, A, since you did not disenfranchise Confederates, you can't disenfranchise me.
So this is a retroactive,
yes.
back 140 years,
yes.
Devaluation of this particular law.
Absolutely. And mm-hmm. what happens is that you go into prison, like there are some states, like in Ohio, you can vote while you're in prison, you see? But so just think what would happen if, and see, one of the issues for people in prison is the status of their conditions of imprisonment. If those people, men and women who are in prison, there are over 3 million people in prison, if they had the right to vote, don't you think that the legislators who passed the laws and stuff to deal with, you know, imprisonment,
prison conditions,
will yeah. certainly have to think more about the families that they break up or the unnecessary group punishment that goes on in prisons?
Right.
You know, this is a whole area, Anna, that is basically out of sight and
mm-hmm.
out of mind
mm-hmm.
of most people. And so this is... And this suit is interesting in the sense that it finally brings, because there was really no will to do anything. And everybody has just given up and then sort of said, well, let's go to the spigot and see if we can get the governor to open it up. So that at the end of his term, the governor will have reinstated the rights of 4,000 people. That's 1%. But think of the 4,000 plus people who are going in, so you end up having no change in the bottom line,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly what
which
they want.
Voters, eligible voters.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to ask a little bit about, I don't know if you can talk to this, about what do you think is potentially the historic difference, political difference, in Ohio, allowing people to have the right to continue their right to vote,
right.
even in prison, versus a state like Virginia and lifetime disenfranchisement being, you know, that automatic.
Well, it's basically the difference between a free state
mm-hmm.
and an enslaved state.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole idea was, at the beginning, the whole issue with regard to African people, what are we going to do with them? Because you got so many, how do we deal with them politically? So they started out mm-hmm. with the three-fifths of a person in the Constitution, mm-hmm. which was essentially to apportion, because for Congress, they are apportioned on the basis of population.
Right.
There are two senators to every state, but a state has more or less people, representatives, depending on their population.
That's right.
So the whole issue really, really revolved around the Democrat hegemony that the South wanted to keep. Because you remember, Democrats were first the crackers, so to speak. And I don't mean to say that in a negative way. These were the slaveholders. These were the people who were about, you know, racial separation, apartheid. That's what the Democrats were. Because, as we remember, Lincoln, who came in, was a Republican.
Now, that's right. My mother talked about her parents saying that the Republican Party was the good party.
It was the good party at one point. Right. You see, so mm-hmm. how things changed. Mm-hmm. But no matter how things changed, there's been uniformity mm-hmm. with both Democrats and Republicans with regard to the disenfranchised. Because, you know, Governor McDonald is saying now, I've restored more rights than Kane or the other dude, the Senator Warner. They were
right.
Democrats.
Right, that's right.
You see?
Yeah.
And so, you know, and it's, so it's an interesting situation. So they say, well, it's a gotcha moment. And this is seen in the 1870 amendment to the Virginia Constitution. You see, what happened was, in 1870, the whites boycotted the Constitutional Convention because of the 15th Amendment, which now enfranchised male Africans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't want any parts of that. So a radical group of people got in, and so they created two. They put into the Constitution felons and Confederates.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they were not able to get a vote on it, so they had a compromise. So they pulled out the two and left them. So they voted on the rest of the Constitution, and then they put these two back up, and only the felons got voted in, and the Confederates stayed out.
And see, again, this is what we're talking about. If you don't know your history,
right.
you don't know where you're standing.
And you're doomed to repeat it.
And you are doomed to repeat it.
Yes.
All right, in the potentially 1 minute that we have left, what would you like our listeners to take away?
Well, I'd ask them, first of all, go on my website, because the lawsuit should be read, because it's an interesting history lesson,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and the supporting material,
mm-hmm.
so they can get a better understanding. It's restoremyvotingrights.com.
Mm-hmm.
Restoremyvotingrights.com.
With no www.
No, right. Just restoremyvotingrights.com. Go on to the lawsuit, and you will see it there and read it. And once you read it, you will really understand really what we're talking about. And the difficulty is that people don't care about ex-felons, so it's not for them
right.
a major issue.
No, that's right.
And so when they understand it, I think they will become better acclimated to say, well, that was wrong, and maybe we should do something.
I think so. I will say that very quickly, one of my few lobbying experiences did have to do with an issue on second chance legislation and voting rights. And what becomes the loudest sort of silence is the fact that these legislators are not willing to even talk about these things because they're afraid of being put on record.
That's correct.
So, you know, there is where silence kills, and that is one of the things that always has an impact on elections. So, if we're not going to protect our right to vote, there's a lot of other things we're not protecting.
And just as you close, just think about it. If you're a Christian, remember, Jesus forgave the two men who were on the cross next to him.
That's right.
And if that's not the ultimate statement of forgiveness, then where is the second chance?
Right. There you go. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Anna.
And thank you for sharing all of that. And I hope that the listeners will take away, one, as I said, the significance of understanding your history. But do read this supporting documentation in the lawsuit. It is a fascinating read. And if nothing else for you, can be points of departure for a better understanding of the context in which we live and a viewpoint that needs to be taken into strong consideration for your children's future. So anyway, thank you again.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right. Join us next week where we will continue the conversation about the right to vote with a woman who has been active in her church for a long time with voter registration. And remember to keep up the struggle and that kindness does matter. And we will talk to you next week. Thanks.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.